This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, a good Sunday morning to you. I'm excited and for today's show because it's going to be a really interesting story about Israel and the October 7th tragedy. And one of our guests will be Yair Moses, whose father, Gadi, was abducted during the October 7th raids at the kibbutzim in Israel. We'll be speaking to him, as well as Shoshana Rice from the Faces of October 7th organization.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Obviously, it's important and timely. I mean, there were 254 hostages that were taken. I can segue that comes to mind for me is, as you know, my great uncle George Sherman was a prolific movie director, directed about 75 feature films and about 250 TV episodes. And probably his most controversial and high profile movie he made, beside Big Jake with John Wayne and Against All Flags with Errol Flynn, he did a movie in 1949 called Sword in the Desert. And it was a precursor to the movie Exodus. It was about an American boat captain who was smuggling Jewish refugees from Europe into Israel. And the antagonist in the movie were the British, who were controlling the Palestinian area. That was, you know, that's what it was called in those days.
Right,
and in
right.
Fact, the movie got banned in the United Kingdom and Australia because it showed the British as being, you know, hostile to the to allowing Jewish immigrants into the country. And so there's a long, you know, I have a long history of, you know, following the events and times of Israel since its creation as a country in 1948. And this movie was one of the first movies that brought to my attention, you know, the struggles it took to create the Israeli state. And obviously, since 1948, all of the difficulty in maintaining Israel as a country and a homeland for Jewish people.
Which is amazing, actually. Well, what a very personal kind of connection to this. I'm looking forward to it, Arnie. I think we're going to enlighten, we'll be enlightened, but I think our audience will be enlightened too.
We always want to get to the facts and get to, you know, real life firsthand experiences about situations that are important as this.
I completely agree. When we return, our guests will be Yair Moses. Back after these words. Good Sunday morning and welcome back. We have Yair Moses with us.
Yair, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
It's good to have you. For our listeners, Yair's parents have been taken hostage into Gaza as a result of the raid that was led by Hamas last October 7th. And so to put this into a bigger perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong about any of the general facts, Yair, but on October 7th of 2023, 3,000 or so Hamas terrorists invaded Israel. 1,200 or so Israelis were killed. 254 hostages were taken. Thousands of citizens in Israel were wounded. Among the hostages and the murdered Israelis were 46 Americans and members from 30 other countries. And since October 7th, the military action has continued between Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah and other groups. And since October 17th, about 1,700 or so Israelis have been killed in the conflict and about 42,000 Palestinians. So in a big picture sense, is that basically correct in terms of, you know, what we're looking at and what we're seeing?
Yeah, sounds correct.
So for our listeners, tell us a little bit. I want to talk about the big picture first and then talk about your particular situation afterwards. But tell me, what do most Americans not understand about October 7th, or what do they get wrong about what's going on? You know, there's a lot of conflict here in this country. There are people who support Israel but are against the killing of civilians or people who, take Hamas's side or take the Palestinian side and all this. Lots of information flying around, a lot of it, not accurate. But, take this opportunity to tell us what we should understand about October 7th.
Yeah. So first, I don't want to get too much into politics and the relations and the conflict and everything like this. But the facts are that on October 7, Hamas intruded into Israel, murdered many people, and kidnapped many others. And since then, Israel is trying to bring them back. A little later, also Hezbollah joined and starting to bomb Israel from the north. And again, Israel is trying to protect itself and bring all their people back. And regarding what happened in Gaza now, this is exactly what is happening. We're just doing, I don't know any country in the world, for sure not United States, will allow some neighbor to invade her, kidnap so many people, and just sit around and waiting for them to be released. We'll go with all the power you have, what to do whatever you can to reach them, rescue them, and of course capture all the people that are responsible for it.
Scott, one of the things I like to do to try to make a comparison so that people here understand that Israel is about 10 million people, roughly. 1,200 people being killed and 254 hostages would be like Mexico or somebody nearby invading California and killing 40,000 people in Los Angeles.
Right.
I wonder sometimes what our response would be if
Yeah.
a horrible situation like that happened in
If you
Los
want, yeah,
Angeles.
it's like 30 time 9/11. If you want to say the numbers of casualty
Right.
that got hurt.
Yeah. In 9/11, there were about 3,000 people that died. And in fact, in another comparison, in the Northern Ireland troubles that we always hear a lot about, and the conflict in Northern Ireland, about 3,500 people were killed. We're talking about since October 7th, at least that many Israelis have been killed and thousands of Palestinians and hostages taken, and I know you don't want to get into politics, but so let me ask you this: you live in a town, you lived in a town, or live in a town of 400 people, a mile from the border with Gaza. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was born and raised there. I don't live anymore for about 20 years, but most of my life I lived there, yes.
What happened before October 7th? Was there any warning about this on October 6th? Was October 6th a normal day, or were things escalating? What was
No.
the atmosphere
October
like? What was the temperature like?
was everything is calm and everything. I was in with my family, and 1 week on the Saturday, 1 week before October 7 over there. Everything was calm. We went to the fields to see the fields. We've been just few hundred meters from the border, and anything looked calm. Everything was normal. No one suspected something like this might happen. No one even could imagine something like this that can happen.
And then in that village that you spent your childhood and have friends and relatives, what took place there on October 7th?
The place I lived is it's called Kibbutz Nimroz. Kibbutz is a type of community that lives together. We are like one big family. It's much more than just a village that you have your neighbors and everything.
Right, there are about 400 members of that kibbutz.
Yeah, there are around 400 members, and also some guests came to the holiday. It was holiday time in Israel, and 117 people were either murdered or kidnapped on that day. More than quarter of the population was hurt.
And that included your mother and father.
Yes, my mother and father. My sister was in the kibbutz also the same day with two daughters, and lucky for us, they managed to survive. Nothing happened to them physically. Of course, terrible trauma. But yeah, and only in the evening we realized that my mother and father are not there, and we understood that. They were kidnapped because also their body was not found, because more than 40 bodies were found in the kibbutz on that day,
And where were
at the
you
evening.
that day, Yair?
I live in a different city called Gedera, about an hour drive from there. And this is where I live today. And I was hearing everything from far, trying to talk with my family, trying to talk with my sister, with my friends that live there. And slowly, slowly, we lost connection with more and more people. everything started on that morning at 6:30 in the morning, and by 9:30 I already lost connection with both of my parents.
Now, what happened with your mother? It's a different outcome for your mother than with your father, correct?
Yes. My mother, when terrorists came inside their house, she was in the safe room. But you must understand, safe room in Israel is not what you see in American movie.
Right.
It's just like a shelter that is on the ground. One of the room of the house is a shelter that built reinforced concrete in order to hold to protect the people from bomb and missiles that they, unfortunately, the Palestinians used to throw on us for the last 20 years from time to time. So she was there, but this room has no lock. It's not supposed to get locked. And the minute they came, they were managed to open the door, and they took her, immediately put her on a golf cart and took her into Gaza, put her immediately to a house and down into a tunnel. And she spent there in the tunnel 49 days without no fresh air, no sanitary condition, very little food, very little medicine, very big humidity, a lot of humidity. But she managed to survive this. And after 49 days, she was released on the first agreement that was in November.
And what about your father?
When the terrorists came inside my father's house, he left the safe room to protect. Together with him was his life partner, Efrat. My parents are divorced. They're not living in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
For more than 20 years, they're divorced. But my father lived with a woman called Efrat for 17 years. And her daughter, Doron, and two granddaughters, which are only 2 and 4, came to visit them for the holiday. So when the terrorists came inside the house, he left the safe room and told the terrorists that he's the only one in the house. He thought they're coming to rob them, so he gave them some money and the car keys. But at the end, they pointed the gun on him and took him. And then Efrat managed to update the family and all the kibbutz that the terrorists took him. And he believed that he protecting them. He sacrificed himself for them. But unfortunately, another group of terrorists came inside the house and found them and took them too on the way to Gaza. Efrat was found dead in the fields of the kibbutz after a few days. And Doron and her two daughters, I remind you, only 2 and 4, were kidnapped in Gaza. They all were wounded. And they spent also 49 days in hospitals and private people houses until they were also released on the same day like my mother. They didn't meet until the release date. They weren't together.
Mm. Okay. And your father now?
My father, we don't know anything about him. We had only one sign of life on December 19th, but the video that was released by the terrorist when he saw him speaking, he looked 10 years older than what he looks 2 months before that, before he was kidnapped. Mm-hmm. Very thin, very tired, but it was him and we heard him talking. It was his voice. But since December, we have no information. We don't know where in Gaza he is. We don't know if he's in house or underground. We don't know if he gets medicines, get food. Actually, we don't even know if he's alive or not.
So what have you been doing since then? I mean, your life has completely changed.
Yeah. I mean, completely changed. I didn't work since October 7th. All I do is participate in activities to raise the awareness and try to have them release. First, both of my parents, and after my mother came back, my father, and of course, all the other. Except my father, there are another 100 people that are still captured in Gaza. Some of them are already dead, we know, but the bodies are still there, and we need their body to be brought to Israel to be buried properly. And whoever is still alive, and we hope as many as can be, need to come back to Israel, be in hospital, and come back to life as much as possible. So I travel around the world. Now it's my fourth visit in the United States. I've been also in Germany, in Netherlands, in Georgia. Telling the story, talking to politicians, talking to people that can do anything we think that they can help us. Also in Israel, I go to rallies, participated in interviews go to media. I never thought I'll be interviewing TV, that people will see me in the street will understand me. One other important thing that I took as a commitment on me is that I will not shave my beard and cut my hair till my parents return. When I did it at the beginning of November, I couldn't even imagine it will take more than a year. But now you can see me with a very thick beard. Usually I don't have this beard, but it's part of my commitment to this. This is all I do. I didn't work. All I do is just doing things I can,
and
I think can help us.
What was work? What did you do for work?
I work with IT, with computers.
With computers, got it.
Yes.
Right.
And you have a family of your own.
Yes, I have a wife and three kids. Yes.
And they support you in what you're doing now?
Totally, totally. They understand it. You know, it's my father is their family too, of course. At the beginning, my wife didn't work also for many months. Only she's a teacher. Only this September, she returned to teach kids. My kids understand very good. They know that sometimes they go for a few days a week, 10 days from home, but they understand the importance of that and they support me completely and wishing me the best that we can do it.
And as you've spoken around the world in different places, what kind of reaction have you gotten from the authorities and from the populace that you've talked with?
Mostly is a very positive reaction. People say, we'll see whatever we can do. We'll try to help you. We support you. But unfortunately, till now, it didn't help too much. And we see they're still there. We know the other side is a very, very cruel enemy, and it's very hard to negotiate with them. But we try to do whatever we can and took whatever people we know that might have connection with the negotiator, mediators, with everyone that might can influence in any chance. Me and many others, we travel around the world to try to do it.
How often do you have an audience with the negotiators and the mediators in Israel?
I don't know exactly. For me, myself, it's not that we have a common. From time to time, some delegation of people, I think some of them are better speakers than me, even, and they go and talk to them and suggest things or understand and tell the story to make it important. But most of the negotiation is done between our government and the mediators, and they talk also with Hamas. From time to time, we get updates, but we don't get update of any meeting because.
I'm sorry. My question should have been a little clearer. How often are you speaking with the Israeli government about what they're doing to try to free the hostages and bring everyone home?
Me and many others, I think it's almost a daily basis contact to someone for the government, some minister, or we have meeting and things like this. But it's not that they have every time something to update us. Usually it's us talking to them and trying to push them to work harder and try to do whatever is possible, that at least from the Israeli side, we'll say, okay, this is some agreement that we can agree to, and we're waiting for the answer for the other side. People are talking with people from the government on a daily basis. Not everyone every day talking, but almost every day someone is talking for someone with the government, trying to make sure that they understand this must be the number one priority task for everyone in Israel and I think for everyone in the world.
I understand that you don't want to be political, and I understand the reasons for that. I mean, it's a complicated situation. But what do you think would lead to a resolution of the situation?
Unfortunately, I don't know yet. It's need to be both sides need to find something that they can agree. They want to end it. I'm not sure Hamas currently wants to end it. And Israel government, I believe there is a will to do it. Sometimes we need to make sure they stay focused and make it harder. But we must have a will of all sides to end this and understand that it's no one has benefits from as long as it continues.
Right. In most situations like this in other parts of the world, there's usually some sort of exchange that takes place. They want a certain amount of their people that are in Israel back in return. And is that the basis of what the negotiation currently is built around?
Yes, but it's not only that. Part of the requirement of Hamas that Israel forces will all withdraw from Gaza. And I think this is one of the things that is not so sure how it's going to be done. Unfortunately, we know Hamas cannot be trusted. So even we have an agreement with them, they break it very easily. And this is why of the fears from Israel, why it's not so simple to say, okay, bring them back and we leave Gaza and that's it. Because we know there are even of October 7, October 8, we still have like an agreement with them of non-violence or something like this, and they broke it. So, and there was agreement from previous times that they attacked Israel and Israel attacked back. So it's very hard to put confidence in their word. And this is why Israel trying to put some restriction to the agreement of leaving Gaza. And from the other side, Hamas is very restricted that they said Israel must leave totally from Gaza. And I think this is one of the major reasons that we never get to get to another agreement yet. But I hope both sides would understand that they must change their mind a bit and find the place where we can meet.
Are you doing your work through any organization, Yair?
Yeah, many organizations that help us. This travel that I do here is an organization that called Faces of October 7th. It's a very small nonprofit that brings people that experience October 7th and to talk to people here in the United States to learn the truth about what happened there, not just hearing rumors or part of news or thing like this. Also, there is a big organization in Israel, also a nonprofit that's called the Family Forums. It's people that started also early the October 7th evening. They organized to try to help the people that the loved ones have been murdered and kidnapped, and we didn't know what's going on with them. And since then, it's became to a very, very strong, amazing organization that all people there are volunteers that helps us, the family, to do all the activities that we want to do in order to save our loved ones. It's some they participate in funding the travel around the world. They do every Saturday there's a very big many big rallies in Israel. The main one in Tel Aviv, but in many other cities that they organize, and many other activities to support us, the families, and help us get put the voice of our loved ones that are not here now, the outside in the world.
Let's do a quick ID, Arnie. Our guest is Yair Moses, and he is speaking to us today from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Yair, you were in Missoula 2 days ago speaking at the Har Shalom Synagogue to kind of tell the story and to talk about the experiences. Where else are you traveling to? I know you were in Coeur d'Alene and Spokane. Where else is this trip taking you on this go around?
We've been also in Bozeman and Coeur d'Alene yesterday. Today we've been to Spokane. Tomorrow we have another big gathering in Coeur d'Alene, and Thursday I'm flying back home.
You're flying back to Israel.
Yes.
Did you have you and in your four previous trips to the United States, where else did you speak?
I've been to New York, Boston, and North Carolina.
North
Detroit, sorry,
Carolina.
not Boston, Detroit and in North Carolina.
Got it. And are you primarily speaking in front of congregants at synagogues and different Jewish organizations, or is it does it run the gamut?
Not only we talk also in churches, even here it's in we talk in Coeur d'Alene, it will be two different churches. Also in Bozeman it was a church. We talk in many places wherever we can arrange a meeting and people want to hear our stories. We will go there and tell the story and tell the people really what happened in October 7.
So there has been for a while an Arab-Israeli alliance between Israel and a few of the countries in the Middle East, like Bahrain and Egypt and Morocco. Have you had conversations with any of the leadership in the alliance, and what position they're willing to take in all of this?
Me myself not, but a lot of people did, especially with Egypt. We try there to talk a lot because they are also have border in Hamas with Gaza, and they have interest to end this conflict. And I know people talk to them. We even my family we tried a lot. My father used to go to Egypt for many years and guide them with agriculture. My father is a farmer. He's been all my life, and for many years he also. He traveled around the world and also in Egypt, taught them how to do better agriculture. So it's also something we try. He and many other friends from Nero's used to travel there. So we tried to write them a letter and explaining and ask for them for their help. Unfortunately, so far these efforts didn't come to any real action that helped us.
Right. So as you're traveling around Missoula and Bozeman and Detroit and other places in the United States, what do you say to Americans who say they support Israel, but they have been protesting or they're opposed to all the killing that's taking place in Gaza? How do you address that?
Well, first, Israel is trying her best not to hurt civilians. It's something that all the people must understand. It's not that Israel trying to kill the civilians in Gaza. The problem is that Hamas has put their missile launchers in hospitals, in kindergartens, between houses, private houses, and you must destroy this missiles launcher because otherwise they will shoot missiles on Israel. And the fault of these people got hurt is on Hamas only because when Hamas attacked Israel, they knew for sure that Israel will react and they knew that many civilians will get hurt. And for them, it's part of their cause to show how poor they are, but their fault for this. Israel is trying its best at Israel when places are about to be bombed, and if you understand there is a missile launcher, Israel notified the people of these houses, leave your homes because we're going to bomb this. And no other country in the world does it. Israel told many people when started IDF started to go into Gaza in the north of Gaza, Israel told the civilians, please move to the south of Gaza because we're going with the army there. And Hamas prevented civilians to go the south. So Israel is trying its best not to hurt civilians. We're not happy about any civilians that got hurt. But from the other end, you must understand, I'm not sure who really are the civilians that are innocent. Because in Nir Oz, except of the Nakba terrorists and then just like I say, simple Hamas terrorists, also many civilians came to Nir Oz and participated the robbing and the destroying and torching the houses in Nir Oz and also in many other places in Israel. These civilians, when my mother was kidnapped and was driving across the streets in Gaza, people cheered and tried to hit her. And we see this in many, many videos when Hamas came with hostages into Gaza, people were cheering in the streets. People delivered candies. So I'm not sure who is innocent. I truly believe there are some innocent people that oppose this and don't want it to happen, but not all people that live in Gaza are really, really innocent. And this is something that people need to understand. People that held hostages in their private houses, are they innocent people? It's a question that needs to be asked. And no one talks about it. It's not just Israel
Right.
decided to, okay, we'll bomb all Gaza, no matter who's died, we'll not. Not for sure.
Right.
People that call about genocide, they don't understand. Israel is doing its best not to kill people. If Israel wanted to kill people, it wasn't a few thousands of people. It was much, much more people. Israel don't want to kill
Right.
any civilians, only the people that trying to shoot her and destroy Israel.
Yeah. In fact, I think we know that when Israel killed Hamas leader Sinwar, one of the major crimes against him was he was killing his own people who disagreed with Hamas. He was a
Yes.
killer of Palestinians more than Israelis.
Of course, and no one talks about it.
Yair, you happen to be traveling in the United States at a very tenuous time right now in our country, vis-a-vis the election and just the charged kind of rhetoric and partisan divide that exists today. Two questions. One is, in your conversations with the communities, has the audience kind of brought that up in the context of this conversation that you're having about what's going on with our government and with our elections? And two, how has that impacted kind of the reception to what you're speaking about?
I must admit that it's American politics. I don't really have much knowledge about it, so it's hard for me to talk about it. But even in previous election, we did heard some news and try to sort what we prefer to do. In this year, the last year, I've been so busy with my stuff, so I didn't even get to hear. So my knowledge about the American politics, even about their position about Israel is so limited and small, so I cannot put any opinion about it. Cannot say what I think about it because I don't know. I don't know enough to speak about it, and I know I don't know enough. So it's
Sure.
hard to me to speak about it.
Sure. So let's, as we all do, pray that the situation gets resolved somehow in terms of hostages and they're returned in some sort of negotiation, and maybe there's a ceasefire or things progress in a positive way. Can you go back to the life you had before, or is this now your calling for the rest of your career?
As long as my father is there and the others, this is my call of my career. I cannot start go back to work. I cannot even think about working. I'll be in work and I'll be 99% of my time thinking about my father and can I do something else and not being in the office now. So for
Right.
me, I don't think I can go to work until my father for sure and also all the others because we need to support the families. All the 101 hostages, their families are now my family. We've been acting together now for more than a year, and we cannot leave them. So if my father, from some, I don't know, something will happen and he will be returned even by a part of a new agreement that will happen or something, and the others will be still there. Of course, I will be with him sometimes, but I will continue to support all the other families as much as I can in their struggle to bring everyone back.
To bring and your father is Gadi Moses,
Yes, Gadi Moses, 8 years old.
80. Can you tell us a little bit about him? What type of person is he? What did he do?
Of course. Of course, my father is he's an amazing man, and I know I'm a bit biased, but yeah, we say in he's people of he's man of people and land. He loves people, loves to help people. And he loved the land. He's been a farmer all his life, working in the fields of the kibbutz, growing especially potatoes, but many other crops too. He studied in university to be an agronomist and specialize in water and irrigation and soil and understand the relations between them. And for the last 30 years, he's been traveling around the world for developing countries and teaching them, lecturing them about how to improve their agriculture in order to improve his life, their life. He believes that this is a right cause to do it. He's not doing it to get paid or something like this. He's really doing it because he believes this will improve their life. Also, when people come to Israel to learn about the culture, he come and lecture them, and because he's a very practical man. He doesn't want them to just to hear the theory, so they bring them to the fields to see exactly how what he's talking about is in practice. He showed them, he dig in the soil and show them exactly how the irrigation they work, talk about the different plants and whatever, and does it with so much passion because it's combined whatever he like. He like people, he like to help people, and he like the fields. And no matter if you'll talk to a group of students like this, a group of university professor, or group of kids from the kindergarten of what is his grandson, he will know to adjust the level of what he's speaking to the listeners, answer all question, even if question was already asked twice or three times, he will answer again, explain, and until everyone are satisfied and no more questions are asked.
He sounds
Yeah,
like a
of course.
wonderful man. He sounds like a wonderful man. How, what type of, he's a grandfather, a father-in-law? What's the relationship like he has with his grandchildren?
Amazing, amazing relationship. All love them, all miss them, missing him. I'll tell you, for example, one story. When I have three kids, and my middle boy, when he was young, is now 17. But every time we went to the kibbutz, he had to go on the tractor to go to the fields on the tractor. We used to do it. And one time we arrived, and I don't remember what exactly happened, but we didn't do it. We didn't go to the fields. I think it was like a birthday party or something, or someone or something. I don't remember exactly. And then we went to the car, and he went with us to our car before we traveled. And then my kid understood that, and he said, "Well, no tractor today." And my father immediately called his partner and told her, "I'll be late in 15 minutes." They had to go somewhere. He took us to the where the tractor were parking. We waited in the car. He went to the tractor, we went inside, drove with him for 5 minutes, so he couldn't let down his son that he didn't go on the tractor. And then he came back to the car. We went home, and he went to whatever he wanted to do. This is just a small example of who he is and what he thought need to be done. What I meant for Efrat, his partner had her own grandkids and from her daughters, and they were together before the kids were born. And from the moment they born, he treated them as his own grandkids. He didn't thought they are different from the kids from his own children. And they think of him as a full grandfather. They don't think this is someone that lives with their grandmother. For them, he's their grandfather. So this is the man he is.
So Yair, October 7th radically changed your life. What in
Yes.
this past year or so have you learned about yourself that has surprised you?
I think the major thing is the mental power that someone can get when he must have it. People ask me, how can you do it every day? Tell your story again and again, participate in all the activities. And the only thing I can think about is that we heard story about someone that was in a car accident, and he was able to leave the car to rescue the people with some powers that no one could believe he has. As for me, these powers are not physically or mentally, but I discovered that the powers I have to hang on and continue to do this are enormous, are endless, almost endless. And of course, sometimes it's very hard. Sometimes you get very tired, but you just go to rest a day or two, and you know it's just in order to gain more power and continue, not just because you're too tired to do it. And this is something I discovered. I also discovered I can talk to the media, something I never thought I would do before. I think I practiced it good enough, and I'm doing it good enough now. The start was a bit harder, but I discovered I can do this. You discover yourself many things that are hidden, but during this period, you must dig deep and find them.
Has it shaken your faith at all, your religious faith?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with my religious faith. It's not for any direction. It doesn't change anything for me.
Yair, what can our audience do to support you? Those that don't have the benefit of seeing you speak live, but hearing this interview, how can they support the organization or your efforts?
Well, one thing is spread the story. Talk about it. Whenever you hear it, talk to your family, talk to your friends, talk to your coworkers. Tell them the stories are still exist. There are still people, hostages in Gaza. And I think that anyone that has some humanity in him need to support the release. Even soldiers that are captured more have some rights. In this case, we have just civilians that were kidnapped from their homes on a Saturday morning, barefoot and in pajamas sometimes, and have no rights there. No one knows what about them. We have no information. No international organization is allowed to come and visit them and see how they are, how they're doing. Are they okay? Are they get any decent condition? We know nothing about them. And this is something that must be heard, and to understand whatever Israel is doing now is effort to release them. Not no no nothing else. Israel is not trying to to go and destroy Gaza, to kill the people, everything. Israel is trying to release them and make sure this will never happen again, this kind of atrocities.
Yeah, that makes it makes a ton of sense. For our audience, we talked about it very briefly, but talk about the concept of the kibbutz and why that's so special to Israel, but really is just how it operates, and because you grew up on a kibbutz. Talk a little bit about that, please.
One thing before it, we want to support, if people want to support and have the possibility to donate, they can donate also for the organization of Faces of October 7 that brought me here. And it's an amazing organization, nonprofit, that does the efforts to bring people to you, to United States, and to hear the stories. So you can go to their website. It's facesofoct7.com. Also, they can go to, if they want to donate to our community. Now I'll explain what happened to Kibbutz Niroz itself, what is a kibbutz and how this community works. We have also a website. I can send you the link or something.
What we'll do is, I think after the break, we'll bring Shoshana in to talk a little more about that. Okay. But yes.
Okay. So I'll tell you a bit about the kibbutz. A kibbutz is a community that lives together. It's not just a village that people live there and have their neighbors. All the resources of the kibbutz are common. For example, my father, he always worked in the field, but it's not like our fields. It's the fields of the kibbutz. And some other members, our other friends, used to work with him in the fields. And whatever was earned from the fields come to the kibbutz itself. And then all the people in the kibbutz, all the incomes come inside the kibbutz, and all the people are getting the same amount of money like everyone else. And it doesn't matter if you're working the fields, if you're a manager of the factory, or you're the people that does the laundry. In my parents' home, there was no washing machine. They have one place to do the laundry for the kibbutz member, so someone working there. And it's a very, for me as a kid, it was amazing to grow there. It's a way of life that people find sometimes hard to understand and to see it, because it doesn't exist except of Israel. But it's a one community, and it's like a one big family that living together. So because I have my friends that I lived with them all my life. When I was a kid, I wasn't sleeping in my parents' house. My parents' house had only one bedroom and a living room. Me and my siblings, we have, it's called Children's House. It's a place that we used to go there in the evening, be together with all the friends that were born with us on the same year. And after, in the morning, we used to get up there, eat our breakfast, and the same house was also our class. We learned there, and only in the afternoon, we used to meet our parents for 5 4 hours, around 5 hours, and go back to sleep there. And for me as a child, it was an amazing way to live. I spent all the time with my friends, and it's great. It's a very strange way of living, I understand. I'm not sure I will put my child, you know, this way of living. But as a child, for me, it was an amazing experience. And the people I grew up with are my brothers. They're not like someone that was in my class. For me, I spent with them, I think even till today, more than my own siblings. So they're truly my brothers.
Stronger bonds than even your blood siblings. I understand.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Arnie, let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, our guest will be Shoshana Rice, who is the co-director of the organization, and Yair for some final words. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guests, Yair, as well as joined now by Shoshana Rice, who's the co-director of the Faces of October 7th.
Shoshana, it's good to have you here. Tell us a little bit about the organization and how you found Zaire and what your mission is.
Sure. So Faces of October 7th is a small nonprofit run by just another young woman and I. And our mission is to really combat the misinformation and inspire resilience against anti-Semitism by creating these like face-to-face connections, by bringing people who either face the horrors of October 7th firsthand or have really personal experiences with it, and bring them to share their stories on college campuses primarily, but also on different synagogues, churches, high schools, and all different types of organizations. You know, the more people that can hear these stories and really understand from firsthand what it's been like in our mind, the better. That's the work what we need to do. We've so far brought about 20 speakers, most of which have been like firsthand October 7th survivors who were either present on the kibbutzim or at the Nova Music Festival. And we've brought them to about 90 college campuses and 350 different communities total. I'm trying to think exactly how we connected with Yair to start, but usually basically we knew some people to start with, and it's been mostly word of mouth. And there's a few different like WhatsApp groups and communities in Israel of people who went through these experiences and want to kind of share their stories to make sure the word gets out. And also I think it's good as well for the survivors and the speakers to kind of help share their stories and help the world kind of shoulder the burden and understand from their testimonies what happened.
So this is a very ambitious activity level for you and a partner to engage in. How are you funded to do all of this?
That's a great question. It's been difficult, to be honest, because we're in the process of becoming an official nonprofit still. So we are hopefully very, very soon we'll have our official like 501c3 tax status and we can get more major donors. But for now, it's been basically crowdfunded from little donations here and there from people at the events. And we do ask, whenever we have an event, the hosting organization to basically pay a program fee. And once we add those up, it ideally pays us back for what we had to spend on the flights and the travel car rentals and et cetera.
So if somebody wants to contribute and support you, how would they get a hold of you? How would they find out about it?
The best way is you could look up our organization online. It's Faces of Oct 7 with like the number 7.com. Mm-hmm. And there you can see more information about our nonprofit. And there's also, should be pretty prominent, some buttons that you can click to donate.
Really so great. Faces of OTC, OCT 7.com.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, in our final 2 minutes, Yair, how would people get in touch with you directly if they had any questions or wanted to offer any help or support?
I'm available in social media on Facebook and Instagram. It's very simple, Yair Moses, as you hear it, and I'm there. And whoever writes me, I answer and willing to participate and contact anyone who's willing to talk to me. So no problem, you can contact me and ask me any questions. And the worst I can tell is, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk about this subject, but it's very rare that it happened, and I'm willing to talk about almost anything.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time and you telling your story. And so people can find you at Yair Moses, spelled like Moses, at Facebook, et cetera.
Yeah, Facebook, Messenger, Instagram, yeah, on all of them.
Oh, all the media.
Okay. Okay, yes. Well, Yair and Shoshana, we greatly appreciate your time, and we thank you for telling your story. We hope our audience will step up and support your initiatives, because to your point, Arnie and I agree, telling your story helps educate people about really what is going on and how it impacts people directly, such as yourself. And we pray for your father to return home safely.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's
our pleasure.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week, Arnie.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.